The Spine Chillers, a new series of five plays. Anna Massey, Michael Bilton, and Blaine Fairman in Figures by Colin Hayden Evans.
Let me put it this way. It's a marriage of convenience only insofar as my convenience is concerned. I won't give you a divorce because I don't want a divorce. It's that simple. I find you a perfectly useless wife, but, rather surprisingly, an excellent mother. Rebecca needs us both, so you will stay. You always stay, unless I change my mind. If you leave me, I will gain custody of Becky. You can be sure of that. And when I do, you will never see her again. You can go to as many lawyers as you like, and they to as many courts, but you will never see her again. Believe me. You're an infant, Anne. Just a kid in the games people now play. I grew playing those games, which is why I always win.
Sorry. I'm sorry, what did you say?
Your husband's Canadian. I was wondering if your husband was Canadian.
Yes, Canadian.
Following on later, then?
Is it much further, Mr. Fuller?
If you bend your head a little, you can just see it through the trees.
Do you think you might stop?
Sorry? Oh, yes. Yes, of course. It's a good view from here, actually. You can't see the outbuildings, but...
How long has it been empty?
Oh, getting on for 18 months. Mrs. Harding lived there before for years.
She lived alone?
As far as I know.
She didn't need all the rooms, then?
Most of them hardly need any attention. We have made an allowance.
Did she live upstairs?
She was getting on a bit. I think she preferred...
Not to?
I expect so. Right, shall we go on?
It's a very reasonable price to ask for a house of this size, actually. Especially as it comes partly furnished. She has no one left, you see. We're handling it for the executors. The door's locked, I'm afraid. We can't find the key. I'm afraid it's blocked, Mrs. Simons.
It is a very reasonable price, Mr. Fuller. I mean, it's unreasonably reasonable.
Oh, a realistic figure, I'd say.
Considering?
I'm sorry?
That you can't sell it.
Oh, we will sell it.
It's only fair to say that I have every intention of buying it. But I would be grateful if you told me, well, shall we say, what you'd first decided to keep to yourself.
Mr. Simons...
The house will be bought in my name. No mortgage will be required.
Ah. Well, it's what you'd call a bit different.
Different?
There's always some that like to look at it that way. I can't say I do.
What are we talking about, Mr. Fuller? What do you mean, a bit different?
It varies. Mostly hearsay, really.
We mean haunted, don't we?
It's a point of view, of course.
But you have an open mind.
I've been a Baptist all my life, Mrs. Simons.
What was in the locked room? Is that where it happened? She was frightened.
No. Well, you wouldn't stay if you were, would you?
Couldn't we force the lock?
Oh, well, now,
I'll be happy to leave the deposit with you this afternoon, Mr. Fuller.
It's a heavy door.
But you'll try.
Well, it's as you see.
Yes. Yes, I know.
Yes, I guess it was the money. It was the best thing you had to offer. Oh, don't tell me you didn't realize. It wasn't as if I paid you that much attention. People have always been unkind to you, haven't they, Anne? But then that's what you want, isn't it? That's what makes it so enjoyable for them.
Every night?
No, just sometimes.
What sort of noises?
Well, I never went into it, to tell you the truth. She used to tell my sister about it mostly. That's how I heard. They were quite friendly, Marjorie and Mrs. H. Shared an interest in African violets, you see. Marjorie's always been one for the African violets.
Did she ever see anything? Mrs. Harding?
Kept the door locked. Hardly went upstairs. No, I don't think she ever saw anything. Mrs. Simons, do you mind if I ask you something?
Why I want to buy the place.
You were right, you know. I can't sell it.
That's really rather honest of you, Mr. Fuller. You don't want me to buy it.
Somebody has to, I suppose.
Especially not me, would you say?
Well, you knew about it, didn't you? The others, they found out, you see. Half the village always fell over itself to tell them. But you, well, you seem to...
No one came to any harm, did they?
How do you mean?
There was only the noises.
Oh, yes. No, it didn't harm anyone, as far as I know. I suppose it's just a way of looking at it, isn't it? If you're not bothered, well, it's all right, I suppose.
When there's nothing left between two people, or perhaps simply nothing to begin with, it creates a kind of space. I know you feel that too, Anne. We both live there now, don't we? Me, comfortably, you, anything but. You feel guilty about not caring, you see? That's your problem. You feel you should care, if only for Becky's sake. But you can't. Your disgust won't let you, so you pretend. You lay with me at nights, whispering your lies, so that the days that follow will be more tolerable. Not for me, of course. Never for me, just for you. And Becky, you think you have to keep me happy. There's no need, Anne. There really isn't. The very last thing I would ever want from you is actual happiness.
And this will be yours. Tell me what you can see from the window.
Lots of trees. Almost all the way up to the sky.
Oh, this will be your window.
Where will yours be, Mummy?
In my room, of course.
You're far away.
No, down the hall, past the old painting on the wall.
The one we have to clean.
The one we have to clean.
Will Daddy come soon?
Yes.
Will he have the same room as you?
Of course he will. It'll be just the same as it was in Toronto.
He used to make noises. In Canada.
What?
At night. He used to make noises. Daddy.
You shouldn't have been listening.
It was only when he was asleep. When I went to the bathroom sometimes, I heard him.
Becky, it was a dream. Either Daddy was dreaming or you were. Well, when people dream, they sometimes do make funny noises.
As if he was drowning inside his mouth.
Becky, like you and I are going to do some cleaning starting right now. Come on.
You can sleep with me in here. If you like.
If you want me to.
No, all the time, I mean.
And what would Daddy say? I don't suppose he'd want a room all to himself.
Why is your door broken? Mummy? Why do you want to sleep in a room where the door is all broken?
I'm sorry if I seem... Well, I take an afternoon nap, you see. Have to watch the old blood pressure. Take it easy, as they say. Basically, you have to stop living in order to preserve what's left. Please sit down, won't you?
Thank you. I shouldn't have called without warning. I'm sorry if I startled you.
I don't get many visitors. Perhaps chat with the postman a bit, usually about the state of this season's garden compost. That can be it for the day sometimes.
Did you practice in this area for your entire career, Dr. Sayes?
And my father before me. He died in harness. I've not been so lucky. Can I offer you some tea, perhaps?
I really only came to introduce myself. We're each other's sole neighbours, after all.
I'm sorry. Have I said something? You were staring.
You bought the place, then? The house?
Yes. We hope to move in properly when my husband arrives. He's in Canada at the moment. The previous owner, Mrs. Harding, I understand she lived at the house alone. You were her doctor, weren't you?
Yes.
She lived on the ground floor only.
She was arthritic. I advised her not to tackle the stairs.
Can I ask you a direct question? Would you mind? What I mean actually is, will you give me a direct answer? You won't ever visit us, will you? You've no intention of setting foot in that house again.
Fuller told you that?
He said only that you'd heard, well, what people do here.
I can't claim uniqueness on that score. Quite a few had. Peggy Harding lived with it for years.
She didn't mind? She didn't mind?
It ceased to be a problem for her. I mean, if your central heating plays up occasionally, you don't turn a hair, do you? It's only the not being able to put a name to the noise that disturbs. Unease is often due to no more than a lack of adequate explanation, don't you think? Besides which, her hearing wasn't up to much.
Fuller said you saw them. He said you went up to the room. The noises were particularly bad that night. Mrs. Harding had phoned you. He said you saw them.
And you are suggesting that I shouldn't have believed what I saw?
No, I didn't say that.
You know, as a doctor, you become quite familiar with the fact that people can, given the circumstances, see things that aren't actually, well, real, shall we say. Put enough gin down someone for a set number of years and you'll produce the effect beautifully. It rather depends what we mean by real, I suppose. I've often wondered, is it real because we see it, or is the reality lying there, waiting to be discovered?
I don't know.
Of course you don't. Who does?
But you believe what you saw.
What I saw left me little choice, Mrs. Simons. Frankly, I'm not sure I quite understand your interest. I mean, you knew about it all before you bought the house, presumably. It reduces itself to merely keeping the door locked, surely, permanently, as Peggy did. One room less in a house of that size is not really that much of an inconvenience, I would have thought.
I'm sleeping in the room.
Mrs. Simons, what do you want?
I know the house. It's no great mystery. Since a child, I've had a recurring dream of a particular house. Well, not very often, though it has increased over the past couple of years. I came to know it very well. It never seemed very strange to me.
Your house?
My house.
Did you dream the house was...
In a way. Inhabited, I suppose, would be the best way of... By things that had to happen. A sense of inevitability. Not because I, or anyone else for that matter, would decide anything particularly, but things happening for themselves. I think things can become their own reason sometimes. I suppose that sounds odd.
Would you think me awfully rude if I asked you to leave now? I get these funny turns, you see. It's better when I lie down. I'm afraid your only neighbour tends to be a bit crotchety. You'll forgive me, I know.
Yes, I see. May I call again?
No, Mrs. Simons, I don't think so.
I don't understand.
Neither do I, frankly.
What did you see in that room?
I have asked you to leave on the pretext of a perfectly feeble excuse that both of us realize has nothing at all to do with what I actually mean. It was an attempt to preserve courtesy, Mrs. Simons. If you take that from me by your continual insistence, I shall be reduced to rudeness. And that is something I would genuinely regret.
But what has been said? Yes, I see. I'm sorry, Doctor.
You come back, don't you? Don't you? You pretend you don't want me to hurt you, but that is exactly what you want. You crawl around on the floor, but never towards the door. Come on! Come on, there's plenty left. Get up. Get up!
Don't do it again.
But you don't want it to stop, Anne. You see that, don't you? You plead with me for escape, but you'd kill me if I ever let you go. Oh, that's it, isn't it? Of course! Your festering little secret. You want me to kill you, don't you?
Yes?
Simons. Alex Slade.
Oh.
Three things, really. Firstly, an apology for my boorishness the other day. No excuses, just the apology. Ill-mannered and no two ways about it. Secondly, any chance of getting called Alex, do you think?
You know...
Depends pretty much on whether the apology washes, I suppose. Finally, what about a spot of dinner somewhere to make suitable amends?
I think we should share the apology, Doctor. Alex, I was visiting largely on false pretenses.
Yes, you were. But thinking it over, and I'm not so sure you had all that much choice, really. Dinner will get you a better explanation.
I can't leave Rebecca, I'm afraid.
Lunch, then?
Couldn't you come out here to supper? You won't come to the house.
If I can call you Anne, it's a deal.
Tonight, then. About 6.
Well, I haven't the slightest idea what I've just eaten, but it was the best meal I've had in years.
It was a Moroccan recipe, actually.
Good God. Well, never mind.
Seemed rather odd to be laying a table that wasn't my own. Even the cutlery was Mrs. Harding's.
Funny little tablecloths she always had, Peggy. Her mother made them, you know. Crochet or something. Never fitted anything. Used to train dogs.
Mrs. Harding?
Her mother. Kerry Blues, sort of large terrier. The place used to stink to high heaven. The garden's full of them, you know, buried them all over the place. Funny woman. Had a lot of shares in Russian railways or something. Wouldn't talk about it much. Pre-revolution, you see. Lost the lot.
We jumped off on rather the wrong foot, didn't we, Alex? I'm genuinely sorry for my part.
Same here. Oh, there's still... a good half bottle to go. Shall we finish it, do you think?
I won't for the moment.
Oh.
Are we going to be completely frank with each other?
I expect so. It would be difficult to be much else on this vintage.
When we first met, I asked
you... I must ask you something first. It would probably sound a bit, well, personal... You just have to take it on trust that it might have some bearing on what you want to know. Are you happily married, Anne?
My marriage is like sitting in a very cold room. A room made empty by another's company. I will have that glass of wine.
Ah, good.
Is that all?
I've polished off the rest, I'm afraid. Sorry.
Is that all you want to know?
Oh, you've slept here?
I've been sleeping in the room, yes. You know that.
And?
Nothing. Nothing has happened, Alex. I've slept more soundly than I can ever remember.
When is your husband...
Next week. I don't have the exact date yet.
What, then, do you want to know from me?
What you saw, I suppose.
I'd gone to bed fairly early, Ruthie, my wife, had stayed up because the cat had gone missing or something. Anyway, I must have dozed off because the next thing I remember was her nudging me awake. The phone was ringing. It was getting on for 2 a.m. It wasn't as if I was even on call. It was Peggy. Peggy Harding. I'm sorry to call you, but they're very strong tonight. I can hear her voice now. It was the first time I'd known her to sound concerned.
But you knew about it before?
Oh, yes. We'd all lived with it for years. It's surprising what you get used to. Though I'm damned if I know how Peggy stuck it out alone.
What happened?
She was in front of the fire when I got there, downstairs, huddled. It wasn't cold. She just looked at me. She was always very matter-of-fact, was Peggy. Didn't treat it exactly as a joke, but never made too much of it either. But that night she was... Well, I just wish she hadn't looked at me quite like that. I hadn't been in the house a few minutes when the noise became even worse. Banging. Thumping, really, and dragging. Dragging something.
In the room? Only in the room?
It was always in the room. I think they want someone to go up, Peggy said. I think it's their way of asking. I remember thinking what she meant by they. How she knew I didn't ask. I didn't want to know, really. All I wanted was to persuade her to come back with me for the night, but I knew that that wasn't on. She wouldn't budge. It was almost a matter of principle with her. She used to say she'd simply turn the television up louder if they got too bad. That's how she was. In a strange way, I think she almost took pride in it. I don't know.
And then you went upstairs?
No, I sat with her by the fire, delaying the inevitable, I suppose. We talked a little, but it was no good. There were voices then. No words, really, just... Peggy had hold of my arm. For someone with arthritis, she had a grip like a spanner. If you don't go up, they'll come down. I know that. I couldn't bear it if they came down, she said. As soon as I reached the landing, they stopped. They knew I was coming. And I knew they knew. When I opened the door, they were as clear as day, two of them, over by the window. It was difficult to understand. They were... One of them, the man, was on the bed. The other one had a... I think it was a chisel in her hand. She had used it. It seems absurd to say he was dead. She turned as I entered and smiled. I couldn't have moved then if I'd wanted to. I simply didn't know how. She lifted the chisel, showing it to me, almost proudly, I thought later. She knew who I was, you see. I think somehow she felt I would appreciate her work. It was also very matter-of-fact. I think it was that which terrified me the most. The casualness.
And the man?
I didn't see the man, clearly. I didn't go near. She sat in the chair, the rocking chair, still smiling. Sweetly, almost. But he wasn't dead, you see. Not quite. He knew who I was, too. He was asking for help, making noises. But she didn't want that, not at all. She stopped her smiling and went for the chisel again.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. You want me to stop?
No.
Look, I'm only telling you this, Anne, because I believe it's over. Your coming here has stopped it. I don't know why or how, but for the first time in years, this house is silent. I can feel it.
It's waiting, Alex. That's why it's silent.
Trust me, Anne. It's over.
Sherry. It's all that's left, I'm afraid.
A fellow advocate of the medicinal binge.
It has been known. When I was very young, we lived in the country. Not so far from here, actually. My father and I used to drive to the nearest town in a pony and trap. Oh, it was only for fun, really. He knew I enjoyed it. One day, there was an accident. The axle snapped. My father was pulled from the seat by the pony. He was caught up somehow on the spokes of the broken wheel. I could only watch, listen to the noises he was making. He couldn't speak, only with his eyes. They had to cut him out eventually, only his clothes, but it seemed with all the blood, it seemed as if they were actually cutting him. I was only a child, that's how it seemed to me. They took him to a house nearby, but he was dead before they could find a doctor. I couldn't move, couldn't help. It was soon after the accident that I first began dreaming of the house.
That might explain a lot, you know. Perhaps your dreaming down the years somehow, well, haunted this place. It made your pain come alive in a very peculiar way. It wanted life. It wanted to be seen in a way that it had not before. It took form in those figures. They existed on behalf of your... well, of your guilt, I suppose. Now it's out in the open. There's simply no need for them anymore.
Your considered diagnosis, Doctor.
Well, if it's wrong, Anne, it can't be far out. It fits the facts, such as they are. Look... nothing has happened since you arrived. You said so yourself.
But I was expecting it to. Inside.
The dream had gone. There was nothing left. What you were expecting was no more than the memory of what you've been living with for years.
How can you be so sure?
Well, I'm not.
And if you're wrong?
So what? And nothing is happening.
Last night, apparently, they took him into the cottage hospital, but I believe they're moving into the general later in the day.
Is it serious?
Yes, I think it probably is. It's the old trouble, you know.
Thank you for calling, Mr. Fuller. It was nice of you.
Oh, not at all. I thought you'd want to know. Anyway, how are you settling?
Came as soon as I heard. I literally did.
I put it down to the Moroccan meal. That sort of thing takes a couple of days to catch up with you. Rebecca?
In the car. I've even let her use her watercolors on the front seat.
Oh. I'm glad you came. I never was as good as I looked, you know.
You always looked awful.
It's about as bad as can be, actually. Damn silly. A dying doctor on their hands, and still I have to suffer their professional tact.
I'm sorry, Alex.
There was something I wanted to say. I wasn't going to, you see, but now, well... that night, Anne... in the room at the house. And the woman I saw was you.
I don't understand.
I'm not sure I do. But I recognized you unmistakably when we first met. But the fear of God upped me at the time. I didn't know then what I know now, you see. It was you, Anne.
And the... well, there was someone else, though. On the bed, wasn't there?
Your father.
My father?
After the accident, they Took him to the nearest house, remember? What was that house like?
Oh, Alex, I was only a child.
They laid him on a bed. You told me. You felt guilty about that all your life. You thought you'd killed him, or at least had been the cause of his death. How did they free him, Anne?
What?
From the wreckage of the cart. How did they get him free?
I don't know. Someone used a fence post as a lever. Oh, there was a local workman. He had tools.
He used a chisel, didn't he? The chisel I saw in your hand that night. The dream is over, Anne. I don't know why or how, but it has stopped. There can only be peace left for you now. That makes me very happy.
Is Dr. Slade dead?
I wish you wouldn't always untuck your blanket. Yes.
Did he tell you the story, Mummy? All of it?
What? Yes. He told me the story, Becky.
Didn't he know then? Didn't you tell him, Mummy? You should have told him, really, you know. Now he'll never know.
It was my money, Ralph.
The implication being that you actually know what to do with it, I suppose.
Sorry you're annoyed, but I actually like the house.
So do I.
Well, you don't have to travel from it. Or in this case, to it.
There was no other way I could let you know in time. You were already in sight. I left a message at the airport. It's the best I could do.
The best you could do would have been to have met me. Who was this Alex Slade, anyway?
Our neighbor. There was no one else to go. I felt I knew him. It was just the priest and a couple of locals. It was very sudden.
And how's my Becky been?
Good.
Have you missed Daddy?
Yes.
You've excelled yourself, Anne. She's even less communicative than usual.
Get ready for bed now, Becky. I'll be up soon.
Yes, Mummy.
Rising, the child leaves the room, dutifully ignoring her father as she goes. The meal was very good.
Thank you.
Shall we go to bed?
No, it's too early. I never sleep if I go to bed early.
You always had such a picturesque form of refusal. It suits, actually.
I just thought...
Ah, yes, I know you. Just thought.
I'm sorry about the airport, Ralph.
If you simply preferred attending the funeral of a stranger to meeting your husband, there's no problem.
I felt I owed it to him.
Were you lovers?
What?
No. I can see you weren't. That wonderful transparency of yours, Anne.
I know you're annoyed. I've said I'm sorry. If you want a full-blooded row, then let's have it and get the thing over.
I don't want to row.
Oh, Ralph, you've been here barely a day, and I feel exhausted.
You always tired easily.
You drain me.
I really must stop, mustn't I?
It never stops. You know that. It's raw, open, and pitiless. I hate you, Ralph.
Yes?
Well, then why? Why stay together when...
We need to, my love.
It's a terrible thing to say.
I can't offer you an explanation, merely a feeling. Of pleasure, I suppose. Enjoyment, anyway. The enjoyment of watching you hate. The frustration it causes you. Is it cruel, do you think? I expect it must be. I can't help it. Well, I don't want to help it, really. I think it probably excites me. I guess your doctor friend would call that perverse, wouldn't he?
In anyone else, it would be. For you, Ralph, it
would be. You like a divorce?
What?
You would, of course.
Are you playing with me, Ralph?
Seriously?
Why would you do that?
Well, it's perverse enough, isn't it? I'm offering you a freedom you spend your whole life secretly avoiding. Calling your bluff, if you like.
Yes.
Son?
Yes, I would like a divorce.
You wouldn't really, you know. Not really.
Oh, Ralph, if you're playing with me.
No, no, I get custody of Becky. That goes without saying, huh? Shall we go to bed now? Isn't that the best place to try and persuade me?
Is it my disgust, then, that you want so badly?
Anne, you're not being honest again. I know you.
No.
Oh, yes, I'm afraid I do. I know you need to wallow to your guilt, you see. Where would you be without it? I have to be in London in the morning. I won't be back late.
Can I sit on your lap, Mummy? I like the rocking chair. What do they call that thing, Mummy? Do you think? I like this house now. We could sleep in the same room, couldn't we? After, I mean. We'd have the same window. I'll go downstairs when Daddy comes, shall I? Just for a little while. Then I'll come and see you again. That's what Dr. Slade called it, didn't he? It's very sharp, isn't it? He knew it was you, didn't he, Mummy? Wasn't it silly of him to think it was Grandpa on the bed?
Anna Massey played Anne, Plain Fam and her husband, and Jill Lidston, her daughter, in Figures by Colin Hayden Evans. The estate agent was played by John Strickland, and Alex Slade by Michael Bilton. Figures was directed by Ian Cottrell.